Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, also writer over at bourbonstreetshots.com. Coming to you the end of the week, Friday, a game day here in New Orleans as they take on the hapless, at least on the road, Brooklyn Nets, who are 1-18 on the road. And everyone's kind of calling this one a win already. But hold on, not necessarily so much, and I'll give you some reasons why on the podcast today. Also on the podcast, we have Shamit from bourbonstreetshots.com, writer over there, a good follow on Twitter as well. We're going to be talking Drew Holiday. In Zach Lowe's post the other day, he mentioned how this is kind of one of those key decisions they need to make. Do you keep him? Do you trade him? Do you max him this offseason, which is most likely what it would take to keep him? It raises a lot of questions. We're going to talk about that for you guys. That'll be in the first half of the podcast to try and give you some insight on what's going on there. I talked the other day about how he hadn't been playing well. You know, maybe he's playing better now. He is. So we're going to discuss all things Drew Holiday there. I'll give you guys a preview of the game tonight, the second of the six-game homestand the Pelicans are on, probably the most winnable game of the ones that are remaining. You know, after this Brooklyn game, you get the Cavs, then the Thunder, and then the Spurs, followed by the Wizards. So this is by far the easiest win. You've got to get this one at home. There's no doubt about that. I can't imagine what the takes are going to be if they don't end up winning this. It's going to be pretty bad. So I'll preview that for you, tell you guys why they should win, where they might actually struggle in this game. For some reason, I just have a sinking bad feeling, and maybe that's me being just a little too pessimistic. But we'll find out, and no matter what, I'll have the recap of it for you guys on Monday. Don't forget to subscribe to Locked On Pelicans. It is on iTunes. It is on Audio Boom. It's on the Google Play Store, the iTunes Store, pretty much everything. It's there. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts are. It's going to be on there. If it's not, just let me know, and I'll make sure it does get on there. Pretty simple. Don't forget to give it a follow on Twitter as well, at Locked On Pels. It's on Facebook, Locked On Pelicans. And earlier this week on Tuesday, I was actually on the national show, Locked On NBA, hosted by the founder of the Locked On Podcast Network, David Locke. He brought, you know, the different hosts on to talk about their team at midseason. Everyone answered, I think it was 5 or 6 questions. So if you listen to the Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA, you'll hear me on there, you know, with kind of the 6 burning questions. Is, are the Pelicans buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? What would make this season a success? Who's played better than we expected? Who's played worse than we were expected or maybe were hoping for? And then finally, it was, you know, different questions like that. So it's a lot of fun to hear all the different hosts come on, talk about that. Make sure you give Locked On NBA, you know, a like, a follow, subscribe to it as well. It's once a week. It's a great, you know, addition to Locked On Pelicans here, just to kind of get your general knowledge NBA news out there with the release of the NBA, you know, all-star starters and teams. It'll be pretty interesting to listen to over the next couple of days. And speaking of the All-Star game here in New Orleans in February, don't forget, the starters were announced yesterday. Take a look at it. But the big name that you all care about and that matters the most is Anthony Davis is starting in the front court for the Western Conference, as it should be. He's probably kind of thinking like, God damn, you guys couldn't have done this last season. Earned me, you know, 20 to 40, I forget the exact number, basically a crap load more money. Who would have liked that, I'm sure. But hey, he's a starter this year. It's nice to definitely get him in there. You know, it is home court in his home city here where he plays. Sounds like, you know, it was a combination of fan vote, media vote, player vote. And a lot of the media were releasing their ballots and giving their rationale for voting for certain people. And Davis was kind of the last one in there, it seemed like, at least when it came to the front court guys, beating out such guys as Rudy Gobert over in Utah. The biggest one he definitely beat out was DeMarcus Cousins over in Sacramento, despite both teams kind of having similar win-loss records. So nice to see for Anthony Davis. Definitely a nice nod for him, recognition of how good of the season he's having. And it's certainly tremendous despite all the bang-ups and the injuries he's kind of been suffering through this year. So nice to see that. I'll talk about that more next week and as we get closer to it. You know, it's nice to put on his resume. It's ultimately nothing more than a fan spectacle event, a recognition that he's having a good year. So, you know, it only takes into account half the season. I always found that a little bit odd. But nice honor for Anthony Davis. Just another thing to put on his resume, something for the Pelicans to be proud of. Tom Benson actually showed up to practice yesterday to congratulate him once Benson found out. I've never seen Benson at practice before, so that was very unexpected, but really just came out there for the special occasion. Now, I talked about Jrue Holiday earlier in the week about his struggles, but I've got a guy coming on who really knows his stuff when it comes to Holiday. So I'm just going to jump right to the interview here. I want to welcome Shamit onto Locked On Pelicans here with me. He's one of the writers over at bourbonstreetshots.com. Also a really good Twitter follow. It's at FearTheBrown. Pretty easy to remember. Got a nice picture of Davis Duncan, the son, and his little banner thing there. Shamit, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I know. First time. So the reason I wanted to bring you on is a lot's been made of Holiday over the past, I'd say, week or two. You know, we had on Bourbon Street Shots, Graham McQueen wrote about why Holiday struggled a little bit and how it's impacted the team. In the Zach Lowe article from the other day, you know, it kind of pose Jrue Holiday and his future with the team is one of the burning questions. And we have a big G-chat of a couple NBA writers on there, and you're one of them, and you posted that they shouldn't give up on Jrue Holiday, so I wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit about why.
Yeah, absolutely. I, first and foremost, am one of the bigger believers in Holiday. I don't think I've been shy about that for those who follow me on Twitter. I think he does an excellent job of, you know, setting the table for guys like AD and our role players. I think he fits into our offense well. Most of all, I mean, he's extremely versatile defensively. So, I mean, there's not much that I don't like about him. But I can definitely see how, you know, given how he's performed this year on the offensive end, people are a little hesitant to invest in him, seeing the dollar tag, like the $25 million that he might earn over this summer. So I can definitely see where the concerns are coming from on that end.
I mean, so as you've watched him this year, has he been as bad as people are making it out to be? I know a couple of the players are worse with him on the court than off the court. And I haven't looked at the numbers in the last like day or two, so it might have changed some, especially after last night. What do you think some of his struggles have been so far this year?
I think if you look at his stats, like shooting percentages, points per game, like any rate stat, he's effectively having the same season he had his first year in New Orleans in terms of shooting efficiency, how many points he's scoring, assists, all of that. And I think, you know, there was like a stretch over the last like few weeks where he struggled particularly. And I don't know if that was like whether he was still recovering from his turf toe, or, you know, his struggles are exacerbated by the fact that, like, we don't have any spacing on the floor with the guys that are surrounding him. But, like, you know, from a lead guard, and especially someone you expect to be, like, number two to AD, you expect more on the offensive end in terms of scoring. And I think fans have rightfully, like, kind of been let down by that. You know, we've seen times in the fourth quarter where he comes up empty on possessions, or, you know, he takes a backseat and chooses to facilitate and not attack. And with a team that has no reliable scoring threat outside of AD, you really want more from your number two player.
Yeah, it's like an aggressiveness issue, isn't it? Kind of, especially in crunch time, you know, against the Pacers when Davis was out, you'd like to see him kind of trying, maybe not take over, because I don't know if he's capable of taking over a game, but, you know, step up in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of my like favorite tweets I've seen over like the past few years, I think this was like 2 or 3 years ago, Jason Concepcion from The Ringer had tweeted out, he's like, you know, I'd love to see what Jrue Holiday looks like if he had taken a bump of cocaine before the game. And basically, you know, saying that if Jrue Holiday played like the frenzied player like Slay, like Westbrook is, just constantly attacking the rim, using his size, using his speed, what would he look like instead of, you know, being the calm, cool, collected guy that he is. And I think we saw a little bit of that last year where he basically had free reign off the bench for most of the year, and then, you know, he was fully incorporated as a starter, but he was basically told, like, hey, go get yours, and he was putting up about 20 points. I think he had, like, 19 points per game last year or something like that. It was his best offensive season by far, and it was because, like, I think he didn't have the responsibility of just, you know, just constantly setting up the teammates or controlling the pace of the game and things, you know, you expect your point guard to do.
Yeah, and so you were saying, you know, despite the struggles, you don't think they should give up on him. And I'm going to ask you after this whether or not, you know, you think they should, you know, re-sign him in kind of what's going on there. But where have you seen him improving? I know you pointed out, and I forget the exact stats, so you'll have to tell us, that he's now positive in a lot of categories.
Yeah. You know, if you look at some of the on and off numbers, how the team plays while Jrue Holiday's on the court, how the team plays when he sits, and you combine those two. Well, first of all, he's like one of three players we have on the team that while he's on the floor, the team actually is outscoring the opponent. So I think that's a good start for starters. And then when he sits, the team is drastically worse. And so the tune of the difference becomes like the team is about 6.5 points better per 100 possessions when he's on the floor, which is crazy. That's a massive improvement from the team that we are seeing out there currently, especially when you consider we were 2-13 in games that he's not played. Like, that's a horrible winning percentage, and we're about 500 in games that he has played, or a little bit better. I think it's like 15-13 or something like that. So he clearly elevates his team from being like on the level of a D-League team to, you know, a mid-level NBA team that is currently fighting for the eighth seed. So I think that's particularly impressive. And then if you look at some of his advanced numbers, he isn't impacting the Pelicans' offense as much, but no one really is. We're a terrible offensive team. And across the board, like, no matter who we throw on in the lineups, in or out, like, our offense is steadily poor. So, like, there's not much of an improvement there. But he has been one of the best defensive guards in the league. Just, you can see it on the floor. You can see it in his numbers. He's been absurdly good on that end this year. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he has better defensive players around him this season. So he feels less of a pressure to gamble. Like, you know, previously, some of his defensive issues where he was inattentive off the ball, he was out of place, he would gamble. And I think he's doing less of that this year because he trusts his teammates surrounding him more. And he's taken on like less of responsibility there. And it's allowed him to really excel on the defensive end.
Yeah, and I mean, he's so strong. He can guard, you know, both guard spots in the backcourt, which is a really useful thing, especially with this switching that the Pelicans want to do. It's very useful there should those type of screens occur. So I think it's largely agreed he's going to get 20-plus million this offseason, which, you know, for someone with his injury history, and I'm not going to factor in the stuff this year with his wife because that's kind of a fluke, and, you know, hopefully nothing like that ever happens again. You know, do you feel comfortable with giving him 20 to 26 million, somewhere in that range?
Ideally, no. Like, I think, you know, Zach Lowe pointed out, if you could have him for $15 million, that'd be amazing. And I think the Pels, I think he pointed out, are looking around the $20 million price tag. So anything, like, under the max would be fantastic. But I personally, if push came to shove, I'd pony up the money. And that's for a couple reasons. Mostly, one, I don't think we can surround AD with a better point guard than Holiday for anything that's significantly cheaper or anything, even for the same price. I think there's like a few point guards on the market this offseason. I think most of them are probably going to stay where they're at. Things like Jeff Teague, George Hill, a couple others that are within our price range. So I don't think those guys are acquirable. I don't think that we could get someone better for Holiday. So if the goal is to be a competitive team, I think you pony up the money for Holiday and you try to make moves around the edges or through trades to fill out the other roster spots.
Yeah, I'll let you, secondly, I'll let you agree with you there because, again, all the point guards are going to kind of stay with their team. So if they don't spend that money on him, they're not getting a better replacement. So you kind of are almost forced to, whether that's a good or bad reason to do it. But, you know, it's kind of what happens when you're a small market team without a lot of cap flexibility in the NBA right now.
Right, right. And I think, you know, ponying up the money for him also has an added advantage because if he does end up playing to his contract, he, you know, one, he makes your team better, but two, he becomes a valuable trade asset because he's, you know, he's locked down for the foreseeable future. And you know, you could look to move him later on if you see better opportunities. Because, like, you know, I think a couple of trades have been thrown around. Like, we might, you know, going after a guy like Rubio or Dragic. And I think, you know, while those guys are good and about on the same tier as Holiday, I don't think they necessarily make the team that much better. I think they bring their strengths. They have their own strengths, but I don't think they make the team better than Holiday does. And that's because I think Holiday has shown to improve the team. The offensive end over the last 3 years, his offensive stats, when you look at his on-off numbers, if you look at some of his ESPNs like Real Plus Minus, if you look at his offensive RPM, it's been really, really good. So I think he's shown that he can be the type of player that drastically improves the offense while being a defensive force. And I think it's only a matter of time he kind of puts it together on both ends in the same year. And that might have to do with the teammates he's surrounded with.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they added some more talent. You can argue maybe they should have done gone a different direction this offseason, but, you know, they're trying to put more talent here, you know, on this team, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, you have a guy, you know, I don't necessarily want to call him a formal all-star because the year he made it was kind of a fluke situation with John Wall being up, but, like, he's still only 26. Everyone forgets that. Like, that's really young. He's more or less just starting to enter the prime of his career, and he's been in the league for 7 years now. It's a useful player to have, and like you said, if you sign him and it's, you know, not necessarily on the high end of, say, $26 million a year, whatever the max is going to be, it's a useful trade asset in the future. Someone, you have to figure, would want him.
Right. And, you know, again, there's other advantages. Like, it gives AD some consistency. You know, it gives him another player that he's played with for a while and this opportunity to grow together. Also, I mean, like, there just aren't many point guards that you can have a coach say, like, hey, go guard Paul George. Hey, go guard Jimmy Butler. Last night, he was isolated against Aaron Gordon, and Aaron Gordon tried, like, everything he could to back him down or move him out of the way, and Drew Holiday just blocked his shot and forced a turnover. Like, there's not many point guards that can do that and then also still be effective on the offensive end.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we're in agreement. Again, he's also just better than any other options. The thing is, if you trade him, say, I know Rubio gets thrown out a lot, and I don't think that trade's realistic at all anymore, especially once they drafted Chris Dunn up there. But say you move him for someone like that and you have some extra cap space, it's not a guarantee that you're going to be able to sign a guy. You can throw money at Gallo or someone else, but if they don't come, all of a sudden you end up in a situation like the Sacramento Kings, where they were trying to clear cap room for all of these guys, didn't get those guys, and ended up with someone like Rondo, and just an absolute dumpster fire and train wreck of a season. And, you know, it's better to kind of go with what you have, you know, the devil you know versus the devil you don't type situation here, I think.
Right. I'm not convinced we'll be able to land someone significant with the money we save, like going after a guy like Rubio. I think we're always going to have to pay a premium to get some guys like that, and they'll always be, like, average to, like, slightly above average type guys. They won't ever be, like, anything that would probably move the needle. I'm not that confident. But, again, like, if you keep Holiday, you have two pieces with AD and Holiday, and you never know when a guy, like, you know, this year Paul Millsap became available. So you never know who and what may be available down the line. And by keeping Holiday, you kind of keep your flexibility to stay competitive open. I'm all about that.
So you said before we wrap up here, I think you were telling me you've got an article coming out about him over on bourbonstreetshots.com soon, or is it changing a little bit now?
There's been a lot of Holiday talk, I think there was another writer that wrote a similar article to one that I'm about to write. But I am currently working on one, and I think fans are going to – it's going to be my argument to the fans of why we should keep Drew Holiday. And I think fans are going to enjoy it. And I think one of the things I'm going to bring up is, we haven't seen him effective as a scorer this year, but Drew is creating more points out of the pick and roll when he passes than guys like James Harden, Chris Paul, LeBron, Steph Curry this year. We could say like, oh, well, he just dumps it to AD, but like, no, his points, when you look at when he passes to shooters, are also better than those guys. And we know we don't have good shooters on this team. So I think his offensive value is overlooked, is underlooked, actually. And that's one of the cases I'm going to be making in that article.
That's definitely going to be a worthwhile read to give some more perspective, a little bit more nuanced take on him. So I'm excited to see that as well. So, Schmidt, thanks for joining me here today. Everyone, give him a follow. It's Fear the Brown on Twitter. And we'll tweet this out when this podcast is up there. So thanks for coming on. We'll definitely have you on the show again soon. This was really good.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is great.
And there you have it. When it comes to Drew Holiday, pretty much most everything you need to know about the future there. But I touched on this when I in the interview there, and I want to say it again right here. You know, if the Pelicans let him go or trade him without bringing back like a significant amount of talent in a trade, if you let him go in hopes you can sign other people, they don't have a ton of cap room otherwise. And we kind of saw the Kings go through this a year or two ago where they made some questionable trades to offload some salary that they weren't going to keep on the books long term to have money to spend in free agency, and then got nobody. And they couldn't do anything because no one wanted to play for him. And they had, George Karl was the coach then. No one really wanted to deal with him. They're in a weird situation with just some crazy ownership and a GM in Vlade who doesn't do a whole lot or know a whole lot, maybe, is what it is. You've got a temperamental superstar. And, that's not necessarily the case here in New Orleans. But, if you're pitching the Pelicans to free agents, top-tier free agents, there's not a whole lot into your pitch other than come play with Anthony Davis. That's it. And at a certain point, that's not the biggest draw. Team, players I think we've seen, especially recently, want to go to smart, well-run franchises. The Spurs come to mind with them getting LaMarcus Aldridge and others, and they want to win as well. Pelicans, you can't say, are either of those two right now. So it makes it tough draw. So if you let him walk or you trade him and you bring in less talent, but you have more money to spend, assuming you're going to throw that and get someone, you might end up disappointed. You might not get anyone at all. And then you set your franchise back even farther. And then what's Anthony Davis think? And that's just not a road I feel comfortable going down. So at a certain point, you have at least a player who's good on this team. You want to keep him versus losing him. So before we wrap up today, I want to talk a little bit about the game tonight in the Smoothie King Center at 7 o'clock, taking on the Brooklyn Nets. Like I said, the 1-18 on the road Brooklyn Nets. That should bode well for the Pelicans. Don't forget they were playing the Nets like 2 weeks ago, less than that really, in Brooklyn without Anthony Davis, and they were actually down in that game, and that's what kind of worries me about this. Davis seems banged up right now. He did get some rest in the Orlando game in the fourth quarter, but he's banged up. You got to wonder if he's going to be as effective and efficient as possible in this game. Pels were down. They had to go on a 13-1 run to get back in and win that game over the final, I think it was 4 minutes. They were down to the Brooklyn Nets. Now, this Brooklyn team, you think, wants to lose. They want to tank. They've got a pick swap in place with the Boston Celtics. So the Celtics are going to basically get their first-round pick. They'll get the Celtics, which stems from a trade a couple of years ago. They have no reason to tank. They should actually want to win and at least play for pride. And, I've talked with some people around the team, and when this Pelicans team plays bad teams, the Pelicans aren't good enough that those teams come in with no hope and just assume they're going to lose. They look at the Pelicans and they're like, oh, we can win this one. I guarantee you that's what's going through the Brooklyn Nets' minds, that they can beat this Pelicans team even if they have Anthony Davis. They're going to look back and say, we played really well against them. And the Pelicans walking in just thinking they're going to kill this team, even though they played exceptionally well against Orlando. You don't want them going in overconfident against the Nets. This would be a disaster if you lose. But, man, it's something that worries me a little bit. Their best, threat right now would be Brook Lopez. He's got a nice three-point shot. Pelicans struggled kind of defending that in the game that they won. They weren't used to guarding him out on the perimeter. It seemed to confuse a lot of the guys. But overall, that's the biggest threat you have to figure they should be able to win this one, especially with Davis. I just don't want them going in thinking they can coast through it because, no, they won't be able to. The Nets can come out and kind of shock them and throw a damper on the Pelican season. They've got some strong wing play, too, and guys like Sean Kilpatrick and such. So, you know, it has weird potential to me to be a trap game for the Pelicans. Biggest thing and the thing you want to take away from this Orlando win, though, is those fast break points, pushing it after grabbing defensive boards. In the matchup with Brooklyn last time they played, which was January 12th, so there we go, Pelicans had over an 85%, I think it was. I'm looking at it right now. Give me 1 second and I'll find it. They had, 85.4 defensive rebounding percentage, so they weren't giving up offensive boards to the Nets, even without Anthony Davis. So they grabbed those defensive boards. Grab those defensive boards again and make a quick pass and run like hell on the fast break to score as much as you can that way. Don't forget, Pelicans had, 32 against Orlando fast break points off of, and only 13 of those were basically off turnovers. So they scored by running in transition, playing exactly like they wanted to with that small ball lineup. They can do it again. In that Brooklyn game, Solomon Hill grabbed 10 rebounds, 9 defensive. That was, you know, by far his best that year. Dante Cunningham chipped in with 3. Against the Brooklyn Nets, we were happy with 10 combined rebounds. Not Brooklyn Nets, Orlando Magic. I was happy with 10 combined rebounds for both of those guys. Solomon Hill can rebound and grab 9 defensive boards again. Oh, hell yeah, sign me up, because this team will push it in transition and score, and we're going to have a lot of fun on the fast break like they did against Orlando. I want to see that again. Do it in back-to-back games. They've struggled with fast break points all year, with points off turnovers and scoring them all year. Do it tonight. Get the win. Make small ball your thing and kind of go for there. It was a bit concerning. Anthony Davis did an interview with Charles Barkley talking about the All-Star game starting nod. And he said, he's like, yeah, I prefer playing power forward, even though center is better for the team. I've talked about it. I'm going to talk about it a lot next week. Identity. Are they a small ball team? Because Davis doesn't necessarily sound like he wants to be that guy. Does the front office see him that way? Because if they are, they need to at least try to get that mindset into him and start building more around it and start coaching it. Can't coach two different styles, which they've kind of tried to do at times this year. Small ball. It's been working. I say that's what they need to do. Push it on the fast break, get a win, move on to the next one, and prepare for the Cavs on Monday. So that's going to do it for the week. For Locked On Pelicans, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Audioboom, wherever podcasts are found. It's pretty easy. Give a listen to the Locked On NBA podcast, where I do the mid-season report for the Pels. It's in there Tuesday one. Just search Locked On NBA. You'll be able to find it. Give me a follow on Twitter, at Nola Jake. Give the podcast a follow, at Locked On Pels. Tweet any questions you've got that way. Email them to jake@bourbonstreetshots.com. That works as well. I like to answer those on here. It's a lot of fun. So enjoy your weekend. Hopefully the Pelicans can get the win tonight. No matter what, I'll be back with you guys on Monday recapping it, and I'll talk to you then.